Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. Perfect for on the go or as a healthy pick-me-up, Irish kombucha brand Synergy includes all the amazing benefits of kombucha, and I'm delighted to team up with them for the coming weeks. Craft brewed in Donegal using 100% natural ingredients, Synergy is packed full of live cultures and naturally occurring enzymes, which helps to detox the body, supports gut health and aids digestion. And they've just launched their first canned range of sparkling drinks. Naturally vegan, low in calories and gluten-free, you can pick up one of their latest cans in supermarkets nationwide. And for more on the brand, go to synergykombucha.ie. This week, my guest is online fitness sensation, Maeve Madden.
You know, one of my friends, she's just started a new career and she was like, oh, you know, a lot of people were really surprised. And she's 37. And I was just like, why? Like, why is there this? And again, back to the age thing. Like, why is there this ageist thing that, like, when you're in your 30s, that's it. You're done. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's over. I'm like, well, I might live to 100. Yeah. I've got 70 years left. I'm not going to do so, you know, I'm not going to just waste my years doing something that I don't enjoy. So I think that's really important, you know, like you can just change. You just have to have the courage to do it.
Maeve lives in London with her fiance, and her Instagram following grew massively in the past year due to her virtual workouts, which led to her creating her online community, Queens Don't Quit. In this conversation, she candidly talks about fibroids and PCOS, her former dance career, the downsides of Instagram filters, and her dislike of cats. She's hilarious, genuine, and I absolutely loved chatting to her. I started the conversation reminiscing about the time we met about 3 years ago when she was promoting her book, Beat Your Bloat.
Yeah, that's right. I was. Oh my God. I can't believe that's 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Crazy. Don't think I'll ever write another one.
Oh, really? Why?
It's so much. Like, I was going to say it's so much work, which it absolutely is. But it is. It's very, very. It's very, very time consuming. And just like university and my dissertation, my mother dragged me through writing that book. But we got there in the end. And I'm just not sure that I would go again. But you never know. But right now, I definitely wouldn't.
But it was a big success, wasn't it?
It was a huge success.
Yeah.
It was sold. Yeah, we went to number one in one of the Yeah, it did. It went to a bestseller, which was great. Yeah. And we did. We had huge success with the book. And I'm really, really proud of that. That was kind of like my first big, I don't want to say thing, but like the first big thing that I did kind of like on the back of social media.
Mm. So you've been promoting real and realness for many years now, and which is why, you know, people find you so attractive, I suppose, and so appealing, and why your followers have grown so much on Instagram. Because I think we need that. We want that. We're craving that, you know, non-filtered, non-photoshopped realness. Now, you happen to be blessed with the most beautiful face and figure anyway, naturally.
Oh my God, thank you.
But I love the fact that you come on your Instagram page if you're having a breakout or you're not feeling brilliant, and you just say it as it is. You don't hold back.
Yeah, I don't know how the fakestagrammers, as I like to call them, I don't know how they do it. I'm like, it's so much effort, girls. It's so much effort with the filters. And also, I think, like, I know a lot of girls, there are definitely fakestagrammers at home in Ireland. But like, people know you know? Yeah. It's not like if you lived in like America or if you live in London or, you know, that you don't even know the person that you live next door to. But I feel at home, like, people know who you are, and they'll be like, do you see your one on the Instagram? She doesn't look like that. Do you know, they know who you are. And I think from like back in the day, everybody kind of knows everyone's business. And I think that's kind of like just instilled in your, you know, in your brain, where you're like, oh Jesus, what would they be saying? No, I don't care what they were saying, but I would hate for someone, if they were going to say anything, would be to say, oh, she's very fake. And like, I think that would kill me the most. So I think that's another reason why I'm like, oh, you know. And also, I think it must be a lot of hard work to be, you know, so fake all the time and kind of have that bravado. And then I also think, gosh, you must be so unhappy within yourself I feel sorry for people then who have to put on that kind of front, that they feel that they need to portray themselves in that way, you know, and have all these things and maybe, you know, rack up. Like, everybody on Instagram seems to, one, be absolutely gorgeous, two, have the most incredible wardrobe, and three, just loaded. I'm like, why is everybody so rich? Like, it's just beyond.
Okay.
Like, where do you get all this stuff? But I'm just like, that must be a lot of pressure. And I know girls who are like that, you know, and they do, they even say, they're like, oh, it's, you know, it's so much pressure. Or they'll do the whole like, oh, buy it, wear it, take a photo and leave it back. And I'm just like, that's work in itself. I hate doing returns. Imagine I'm doing returns all the time.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It probably is born out of low self-esteem. And I know, look, I was at Soldier too. I think it was it this time last year, I maybe just kind of made a decision to kind of leave filters off my page, because I would go on and I would, you know, swipe across to the Paris filter and I go, oh, I look great, let's put that up. But that's not me. That's not real. Yeah, completely. So ditching it, although it was hard, because it becomes a crutch and it becomes so easy to use filters. I don't actually personally use them anymore. And I'm not trying to make out that I'm great, but because I understand how, number one, addictive they are, because you, of course, you're going to look maybe... Well, actually, sometimes I don't think you look better than your real self. I think sometimes you just look odd and alien-like. But it distorts your own sense of self.
Yeah, I really notice that now, especially as I'm like, now I'm 35, and especially with the Paris filter, that can be like, are they wearing a filter or are they not wearing a filter? But you know that you've swiped across, and all of a sudden your skin is brighter, it's smoother. And like, the odd time I will do it, but I'm the same as yourself. I've tried to not use filters, like, especially on my stories. I know that when I post photos, I will, you know, enhancing the light and stuff like that. Like, it is winter and I need a bit of brightness. There's no sun in the sky. But especially on that, where I was looking, and then I'd look at myself in the mirror and I'd be like, Jesus, I've awful like lines under my eyes. And then you look at yourself in your camera and you're like, you know, it does, it affects your own mind, even just yourself as a person, never mind what anybody else thinks. But like what you're doing to your own mind by adding these filters, and even the ones that were like, you know, the whole thing now is like this teeny, teeny, like Michael Jackson nose with these fox eyes, these eyes that are lifted and these big lips. And I'm just like, why would you want to look like this? Like, yeah. This is just, you know, it. And you swipe across and you just so easily change your whole face. And then all of a sudden these things are trends.
Yeah.
It's just mental.
It is. I mean, I'm a good bit older than you. I'm nearly 42. But can you imagine if we were teenagers or we were in our early 20s and this was our norm? I mean, you'd wonder how it's psychologically impacting people, particularly women, particularly girls, because fellas, I don't know, are they as bothered? I'm not so sure.
It just never seems to be filters for men. Like they always seem to be, in my opinion, they always seem to be, oh, that's so sorry.
Don't worry about it.
An email came through. So the filters always seem to be almost like pushed towards women. Like it's always, you know, kind of like a makeup-y filter, like summer glow or, you know, summer tan. Or I don't know why it's just summer. Summer's just in my head. I'm just dying for summer.
Wishing for summer, yeah.
But you know what I mean? It never seems to be directed away. It's always like adding makeup or adding foundation or some kind of highlight or bigger lips. And like, I don't know, maybe there are some men out there who, you know, who do love an enhancement, but to me it always seems that the filters make your face more feminine and more, not more feminine, because it just plastic.
No, but I get
just
you. Yeah.
Like females having plastic surgery, and that's what it looks like. And it's just you know, it is, it's crazy. And I can't imagine, you know, what it's like if I was like a teenager and at school and stuff like that, that you would be like already thinking like, oh, when I'm 18, I'm going to have a nose job or I'm going to get lip filler or, you know, when I'm 18, I'm guessing that's the age that you're allowed to do things. You know, I'm going to do this like this person. And I think that it must be, you know, it must be just an insane amount of pressure.
I'm just trying to imagine the person listening to this now, because I have, you know, people listen to this podcast of all ages, from, you know, in their 20s right up. But if you're listening to this and you're somebody who is using filters, loves them and feels like you can't live without them, it's not a judgment, by the way. This conversation is not a judgment on you, because I think it's safe to say that we both get it, because I used them myself. But it was very liberating when I stopped, and it was a bit scary. I'm not going to lie. There were days when I just didn't feel 100% going on stories, and it would have been so much easier to swipe right and use one of those filters. But I knew that it wasn't doing me, number one, any good. But what would you say to somebody listening who just feels like, oh, no, I need them. I can't just, I'm not able to do that. I'm not there yet.
Oh, it's, you know, it is really difficult. And it's like, I would almost say, like, take a step back from social media just to, like, almost see yourself as you again, seeing yourself in the mirror, seeing your, you know, seeing your reflection and who you really are as a person, and how much you, like, really, you know, you don't need to portray yourself in that way, you know, the way people see you in reality. And I think also the past year has, because it is a year since we've been in lockdown, you know, we haven't seen people. We've been stuck really by ourselves. And if we go out, we're covered with a mask. So it's like, you know, you have only people are only really seeing you through, you know, through social media. And I think that is also a major issue and, like, you know, a concern. But for someone who is, like, addicted to filters and felt they always had to use them, I would say, like, you know, take a step back or delete them. Delete them all off your phone. Like, and even just, you know, practice using, you know, using the phone without, you'll just feel so much better within yourself.
Yeah.
It is a really hard thing. And it's almost like anything. You have to go cold turkey. You just have to say, no, enough's enough. And it's almost like people see you who for, you know, for who you really are then. And, you know, and I think you will just, you'll actually feel like you have more confidence when you're not hiding behind a filter. Like, you'll just feel more confident within yourself. And for me, it was very much like, whenever we started in lockdown, I was obviously doing all of these Instagram lives, and doing the lives. So I was doing the Instagram lives, the workouts, I have this thing called Queen's Don't Quit. But like the girls who see me on that every single day and who join me every morning, whether it be, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, like they see me rolling out of bed, not even my hairbrush. Thank God they can't smell my breath. Half the time I haven't even washed my teeth. But you know what I mean? Like, and I feel like that has really also helped me just, you know, being myself. And, you know, you can't filter, I don't know, maybe you can filter an Instagram live, but like most live things that you can't filter. And so they just see you for who you are and, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then it's also lovely when you do put on your makeup and things like that, because you're like, oh, you know, I've enhanced myself a little. I've used some makeup and I feel so much better. You know, and then that's, you know, that's kind of like the olden days filter. Like, putting on a little bit of makeup, and that should be enough.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I will say, because I'm listening to you here and I'm just imagining, if I'm thinking it, other people are thinking it as well. But, you know, I'm imagining you first thing in the morning, rolling out of bed. You haven't brushed your teeth and you've come on Instagram and you're doing your workout. But you're also just fucking gorgeous, Maeve. You're really very beautiful naturally. So, you know, makeup only enhances. Some people maybe struggle with how they look. Do you know what I mean? So I suppose it's a tough one. But look, I mean, I think that message is such an important one, because, you know, it's true what they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and we need to step away from this, you know, idea of what perfection and what beauty is, because, you know, I think it's fair to say that we both know that beauty runs far deeper than what we can see, what the parts can see. It's far more about your vibe, what you're about, how you treat yourself and other people. And that's why I like your community, your Queens Don't Quit. That's what you're about. You're about empowering women to feel good in their skin.
Yeah. And we do. We have so many women, mainly Irish women, but so many who have joined us. And like all of the stories are just so incredible. We just finished a 10-week challenge. And the challenges for us are never about, I know, you know, a lot of people do like these transformations and transformation challenges and things like that. But we don't focus on that. You know, at Queens Don't Quit, we just focus on like building confidence and just enjoying movement and creating, you know, a healthy, balanced lifestyle. Mm. And it's just amazing, like the transformations that we've had physically and mentally, but mainly mentally, just people who are like, you know, just love coming on every day, everybody supporting each other, encouraging each other to move, you know, building this like amazing community of women who just all support each other. And, you know, it's like really cheesy, but like the quote that people say, they're always like, oh, great things happen when women come together. And I'm like, it really does? The women support each other, amazing things can happen. And we have this incredible community that these women, you know, I'm obviously leading the community, but like if it wasn't for them and them all coming together and being so supportive and kind to each other, especially during this time, you know, Queens Don't Quit wouldn't exist.
Yeah. But you're a girl's girl, I take it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all women. It's like, but even my following on Instagram is like 97% female.
Is it? Yeah,
no men.
There you go. Yeah.
Just like my brothers and my fiance. That's it. Nobody else follows me. But yeah, no, it's just predominant. But I think that's because that is one, maybe it's because I show the reality of myself constantly, but also because I talk about, you know, I'm not there. I'm not like sex appeal Instagram. Men want to follow me. You know, I'm talking about women's health and women's issues and, you know, building, and that's, you know, that's what I want my platform to be. I want it to be educational in that way. You know, I don't even share my relationship. Like I got engaged there on New Year's Day and people were like, I didn't even know you were with someone.
Yeah, okay.
Like, you know, I can't believe, you know, you're all of a sudden engaged. Like, is this something that's happened really quickly? I'm like, no, we've been together 3 years, but we've just never, you know, I've just never shown my other half on social media. And that's the other thing, like, you know, you can be on social media, you don't have to share your entire life, you know, to gain a following. A lot of people are like, oh, I have to, you know, you have to share absolutely everything. I'm like, no, it's like, you know, it's social media is only what you choose to, you know, to show people. You can keep a lot of your life, you know, separate. And for me, my platform is just, you know, women's health and fitness. And that's what I like to show. So I just keep a lot of other parts separate. And then it's lovely. You know, you have things that aren't online that for everybody to see and talk about.
Yes, I'm very private about my partner as well. He doesn't appear on my page and photos or stories. Now, he does exist, but I just I'm very much on the same page as you. And I think, you know, it's important to have your own boundaries, whatever suits you. Some people are very comfortable with it, but I think a lot of the time it comes down to a conversation between yourselves. What would you like? So is this something that you both agreed, or was it more kind of driven by you or him? How did you come to the decision that you wouldn't appear on Instagram together?
I think it just never really happened. I just never shared, like even before him, I never shared any relationships or anything like that on. So I did once. I was dating a guy for like a couple of months and he was on that, and then we broke up. And then everybody wanted to know. Mm. And then I had to tell everybody and they're like, oh my God, what happened? And I was like, geez, like this is just too much. Like I'm not about this. And you know, because it's a very emotional thing,
of course.
And so I just was like, well, never again, not doing that. And so then I just never. And with himself, like, he's not on social media at all either. Well, he is, like, he has an Instagram account, but he doesn't really go on to it. You know, it's only like family and friends, and so he's private on his. So you know, I just don't find it necessary to. You know, to share that. I'll probably share a wedding photo when we get married. Mm. But that's, you know, that's about it. And he'll still, like, even though we're engaged, he's still not, you know, people are like, oh, are you going to share now? And I'm just like, well, no, because he doesn't really want to be on it. And I don't really want to plaster him all over it.
Yes.
And
it's nice to have things sacred as well, isn't it? It's you, exactly. You know, this is your private life. So, you know, you don't have to share it with the world.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, I share so much of myself already. Yeah. And, you know, I would like to think I'm more of like an educator on Instagram rather than, you know, I do share a lifestyle, but I also educate women in, you know, health and fit, you know, and nutrition and things like that. So that's what I'm really doing rather than being kind of like someone's life that someone's following, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Absolutely. I really want to talk to you about your life pre-fitness. And I know, obviously, you know, being physically fit played its part in your life the whole way along, because you were a dancer and you were a bloody good dancer as well. You were a professional Irish dancer. You performed at an elite level. You were with Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance. And what happened? You were in an accident and life changed.
Yeah, so I was actually performing with him in his show. He had created a new show and it was called Celtic Tiger. So he had the Lord of the Dance, the Feet of Flames. And then this was like his final show that he was doing. And I remember going through so many auditions to get to the show, because this was like, he had taken a long break after Feet of Flames and the shows were continuing, but not with him.
Sure.
As they still do now. Mm. And then he was doing like a one last comeback show. And I was like, oh my God, like I have to, like, it's great obviously to be in the shows, but to then have the opportunity to dance with him.
Yeah.
Is like, as an Irish dancer, was like the best thing that you could do.
Sure.
So I made it into the show and they made like a DVD and everything. A DVD. Oh my God. I can't believe I said that. We made a DVD. At least we didn't say videotape. So they made a DVD and I'm in it. And it was fantastic experience. And I toured with the show. And we had like a few weeks off and I went home and I was in a car, and it wasn't like a major, like I almost died car accident.
Okay.
But the way I was sitting in the car, now I did have my seatbelt on, but, and I still do it to this day, which is so bad. So nobody try this at home. Mm. But I will sit with my feet up either on the dashboard or just like up on the chair rather than sitting normally like a normal person.
Okay,
I'll sit with my feet up, and that's the way my foot was up on the dashboard, and it kind of like it like pushed back and I hurt my, anyway, whatever happened, I can't quite remember, I hurt my knee and I couldn't dance. And when I was going on tour, in like a week's time. And they were like, you won't be able to go on the tour. So I called, can't remember. I called someone, what was his name? Peter, his name was. His name was actually Peter. I just didn't make that up. So I called Peter and I'm like, I can't go on the tour. And the tour was 6 months. And they said, oh, well, how long are you out for? And I was like, oh, probably 2 to 3 months. And they were like, well, why don't you sit this tour out? And then you can come on the next tour. And at this stage, I was like 20. And I'd been doing, or maybe I was 21. I'd been doing it for 2 to 3 years, the shows. And mum was like, it was like August. And she was like, why don't you go to university? And she was like, you know, you did your A-levels. You want to go to university anyway. Basically, they want me to go, like my parents wanted me to go to university. And she was like, now would be a great time because, you know, people will still be going to university and they'll all be your age and it'll be great. Mm. So I was like, right, okay. And my sister lived in London and some of my friends who were in school had also gone to London to university. So I was like, oh, perfect. I'll just, you know, I'll go to university. And so that's what I did. And mum was like, if you don't like university, then, you know, after the 6 months, you can go back into the show and you can continue doing that. Anyway, I went to university and naturally I was having a great time. And I felt then, you know, I was like, my life has now changed. And, you know, I danced from the age of 4 years old right up until like 2021. And so I was like, oh, you know, I'm finished with that. And so it's funny because like, you know, everything does happen for a reason. And I know that can be like a bit corny. People are like, everything happens for a reason. And I'm like, yeah, but it really does, you know, and you can see the negative in it. Like, oh God, I was in a car accident. But then you have to see the positive of stuff, you know, that maybe, you know, that I was obviously in that accident because it was time to move on and to do something else with my life. You know, and that's led me to London life and where I am now.
You do sound so positive about it, but were you always so positive? I'm just imagining that if you have achieved, you know, you're dancing at that level, you were clearly brilliant. I mean, Michael Flatley won't cast any old dancer in his shows. And you're,
I'm like, yeah, I was.
Do you know what I mean? You were brilliant. And then you were that young. You'd worked your, you know, you were dancing through your entire childhood. You were probably competing at all the different competitions and all the rest. Yeah. But for that to have happened, I mean, how did that emotionally impact you at the time? To think that you were leaving this career behind you?
I don't think I was that. To be honest, I wasn't really. I would say this is, it's not awful because it's truth and that's what we're here to talk about.
Yes, exactly.
But I would say it was probably my least favorite show. So I actually did like a few shows. So there's not just like Michael Flatley's show. There's like lots of other like smaller shows that were great. And there was like also brilliant dancers in them. And so I had done like two other shows before joining his shows. And they were a lot more fun, but obviously they weren't Michael Flatley's shows. So his shows were, you know, it was very, very serious. It was very regimented. It was very intense. And, you know, obviously I'm so grateful for the experience. And I was with them for about, I think just over a year, maybe a year and a half, doing those shows. And, but when I did have the accident, it was almost like I wasn't devastated. I was a bit like, oh, okay, now my time is up. Like, I'm ready to, I was ready at that time to stop doing it and move on to something else. I think I had already, you know, I had reached the peak of what I was doing. I couldn't really go any further than that. And, you know, I did it, you know, I danced with him for a long time. And so then I was like, oh yeah, now it's time to move on. But I'm quite like that. So with everything I do, I'll do it so far. And then I'd be like, okay, you know, I've achieved, you know, what I wanted to achieve. Let's do something else. I think it's the Gemini in me. I'm a bit into the horoscopes.
Yeah.
I get bored really quickly. And with that, I was like, you know, I feel like I had started to not get bored, but I was just ready to move on and do something else. And that's fine, you know, and maybe I would have been more devastated had I not been. And I definitely think had I not been and danced with him, I would probably look back and be like, I should have gone on. I should have done it until I did the best that I could. Mm. And that would have been to dance with Michael Flatley, but I did. And so I was pleased with that.
Well, it's kind of like the book, isn't it? You did,
yeah,
the book.
Exactly.
It was a success. You've ticked that box. You're done. Don't really feel like I'm doing another, never say never, but it's unlikely, move on. Dance, yeah, I did it at a great level. Now I'm going to move on again. So the phase you're in your life right now is you're riding high. Your followers have jumped massively. I mean, how many followers did you grow within the past year?
How many did I grow? What am I on today? I grew over 100, I think 130 or 140,000 in the last year.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I was on 194, I'm nearly sure about 194,000 this time last year. So I grew loads.
And obviously it's down to you just being you and doing your thing, and the fact that actually people now want to do, you know, their workouts online. They're craving this content. So I know a lot of people like you that are doing incredibly well through this time, that unexpectedly business is booming, which is great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a lot of work. So I actually went into lockdown because I was like, oh, I want to go home. And so we were like, we'll go into lockdown early and then we'll have the 2 weeks and then we'll pack up and we'll go home. And that was kind of like in my head. I was like, well, then that means we definitely won't have caught this COVID when it first came out. Mm. So I wasn't going to the gym and I was like, oh, I'm so bored at home. But obviously I'm a personal trainer. So I started doing the live classes just before, like before we were like kind of in a lockdown. And I'd started to kind of do them. I think I did like two or three. And then, you know, people kind of started following me. And then I decided, oh, maybe I should do more than two or three. Maybe I should do one. And then we went into lockdown and it was like disaster. What are we going to do? So I was like, oh, well, I'll do these every day. Mm. And then it was like twice a day. And then I was doing like almost 10 classes a week for like the first kind of 6 months that we were in lockdown. And it was kind of like after about 3 or 4 months, we were like, oh, when we came out of the first lockdown, then it stayed really popular. And I decided then to like develop the website and everything so that you could join and like subscribe to my site where we would do, you know, more lives. Now we run almost 20 lives a week, and I have like 4 other trainers on board who also take live classes and myself. But I literally haven't had a day off since that first day of lockdown, like that first week of lockdown. Literally, it's just been like non-stop, just like go, go, go. But it's great and I really enjoy it. And, you know, I'm just like, sure, what else would I be doing? You know, even if I wasn't in lockdown, I would be going to the gym, so I may as well just work out from home. And I actually find I'm like fitter than I have ever been, than like any time that I go to the gym. And it's so funny because I think before we felt, you know, oh, you can't achieve so much when you're working out at home. Like you have to go to the gym, you have to be doing stuff and, you know, you have to be lifting all these heavy weights. But it's just amazing what you can achieve. And because you're at home and you're in the comfort of your own home and nobody else is watching you, you don't have to, you know, get up, get into the car, drive to the gym, you know, put yourself in a locker, make sure your outfit's matching and your hair is done and your teeth are brushed and all the rest. And then, you know, do a workout, wait for the class, do a workout, chat to someone after. And next thing you know, you've 2.5 hours of your day are gone for a 30-minute workout. Mm. And it's just, you know, it's great because you're just like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter if my leggings aren't matching. Doesn't matter that I wore these every day this week. I'm just going to throw them on, going to do the workout, and then you're done. And you're at home and you can go about the rest of your day. And, you know, people are getting, you know, great results. Like I said earlier, like, you know, physical and mental transformations that we've had. Some woman's lost 5 stone. I was like, what?
Wow.
I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And then I'm like, we just finished a 10-week challenge and someone lost like 27 pounds. And I was like, that's ridiculous. And we give nutritional advice and I do have a nutritionist on board, but they're not following like a nutritional plan. We're like developing that anyway. But this is just like from us just coaching and just saying, you know, do these workouts and, you know, enjoy yourself. Like it's all very balanced. Like we're not restrictive in any way. And people just love it.
Yeah.
It's just great. And people have more confidence because they're at home.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they, you know, people who would have maybe stood at the back of a class or even like myself, you know, afraid to do a burpee because some fella's watching, probably not watching, but I think he's watching, and, you know, probably has no notion that I'm even in the same room as him because he's too focused on his own workout. But, you know, it's just in your mind, you're like, oh my God, someone's going to look at me and what if I do this wrong? Where when you're by yourself and just in the comfort of your own home, she can go all blades of glory, like, you know, give it all you've got. Nobody can see your boobs maybe up and down and flapping all around. Nobody's watching, you know?
And
that's, you know, that's the fun thing. And, you know, and what we love. And that's kind of why we called it Queens Don't. I don't know why I started calling everybody Queen. I think because so many people were joining in that I would forget people, you know, I'd forget who was on. And so we just started, and me and my friends do that. I do jokes, you know, we'd be like, oh, Queen, like joking. And then it just kind of stuck.
It's great.
And yeah. And then came, you know, Queens Don't Quit. And it's it's really fab.
Mm. You posted something on your Instagram when you turned 35 in February, and I absolutely loved every single word of it. And I think for a lot of us who read it would have resonated with your words, where you basically spoke about how at 35 you were at a point in your life where you were content, but perhaps your life wasn't going the way that many years ago you may have thought it would. You know, we sometimes have this idea in our 20s of hitting certain milestones, be it marriage or babies or otherwise. And I just thought the way you spoke to your followers was, well, personally, it's right up my street, but I just thought it was great. So can we talk about that and where you're at now and what you've learned? Because it sounds like you have gone through a lot of changes in the past while. You're a different person, I'm guessing, than you were in your 20s.
Oh, absolutely. And even like, it's so funny. I was like, as a teenager, like even at school, you know, you were like, when I'm 25, I'm going to be married with the house and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I just like look back and I'm like, oh, how naive I was. And I was just like, and also just like the, you know, the adventures I would have missed, because the adventures I have had, you know, kind of through the years have been so fantastic, like ups and downs, major ups and major highs and major lows. But I suppose that, you know, that's what makes you who you are in the end. But yeah, it's just, you know, growing up. And I think also from like with my parents and stuff, especially my mom, geez, when I got engaged, she was like, oh, I thought I was going to have to pay him. And I was like, thanks, mom. You know, like typical Irish mommy, like, why are you not engaged? Like, when are you getting married? Yeah. And, you know, kind of given up. Thank God my sister got engaged. She's older than me. She got married when she was 38, so a few years ago. Mm. But yeah, so that kind of took
the pressure,
you know, it kind of took the attention off me for a while, that one of us was getting married. And then it was like back on me. Never at the boys.
Yeah.
Oh, but the boys could do no wrong.
Just
the girls.
Yeah.
And so it's so funny. But then she also, you know, she, and I'm just talking about my mom, she also, you know, she would be so proud of like everything that we do.
Of course.
And, you know, and she does, she wants you to do all of the, she wants you to do everything, but she also wants you to get married and have loads of babies. But yeah, so growing up, I suppose, like in my 20s, you know, I went to university and I kind of did everything a little bit later because obviously I did the show. So a lot of people my age were finishing university, I was only starting university. And I was in London, and then I changed unis and all the rest. So I think I ended up being at uni for about 5 years, and it was great. And I loved every minute. And, you know, and then you kind of go through, when I finished uni, I wasn't sure what I was going to be doing. And I was in a relationship, and I was like, oh, this is the one. And now I look back and I'm like, Jesus, I'd be divorced about 5 times now. I'd be like Kim Kardashian, like loads of divorces. If I had thought that every single person I was going to marry, if I had married them, I'd have loads of divorces under my belt.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you just kind of, you know, you grow and you think that you think that this is it and you're so mature. You know, and you just know everything, and mom is wrong and you are right. And and then you realize actually mom is right and you have to tell her that. And it's fine in the end. But yeah, and as you, and it was the same, like, you know, I studied teaching, and again, another thing, oh, that's a great job. It's almost like every girl at school. Like, you pass all your grades, you're going to be doing, you know, like, you'll be a doctor or you'll be a lawyer. And if not, you're going to be a teacher, and there's no other career at all. Mm. And so I did teaching, and actually I did international business first. And then I went and I did teaching when I was finished that. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to teach and then I'm going to open a daycare center. Wow. Day one on my practice in school, I was like, I hate children. I can't do this. I was just like, this is just not for me. But I finished it because I finish everything.
Yeah.
So I finished it again, dragged through it. And after that, I was like, I definitely, and I actually did. I did work experience in schools and everything. And it just really wasn't for me. And if I don't like something, I just won't do it. Mm. Like, that's just it. I just won't do it.
And what classes were they? What age group were you dealing with?
Oh, children. Children who were like four. And I was just like, why am I here? This is horrendous.
Is four not a cute age, though? Are they not?
Like, painful. Painful. Trying to teach children that don't know how to count. I'm just like, one, two, three. How do you not know? Like, just being like, or you know what's even worse?
Oh
my God, I have no patience.
Okay.
That's funny because I have so much patience for like people my own age, like, you know, teaching them through training and things like that. Or I have so much patience. But watching a child try and write the alphabet would drive anyone to drink. I swear to God, how moms have got through lockdown homeschooling, I'd be in prison. I really would. Like, I just couldn't cope with the slowness.
So, I'm just guessing there are mothers listening to this roaring laughing going, yes, yes, Maeve, it's been hell. Yeah. Because it has been so hard, I think, for so many, not just mothers, obviously fathers as well. But like, yeah. We have a little boy, he's 3.5. So we're kind of lucky the homeschooling hasn't really been necessary. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine the homeschooling was painful.
I have a cousin who has twins that are a year and her daughter is in primary one. Yeah. And she has a full-time job. And I'm just like, how? She's like, glass of wine every night. I'm like, a glass, a bottle. Jesus, I'd be in a bottle or two. Like, how you are doing it. It's just, you know, and like, fair play. Like, I can imagine it has been so difficult for so many trying to do that. And the homeschooling of all different ages. And then trying to do your full-time job on top of it.
Yeah.
I was just like, how are people getting things done during this time?
Yeah.
But I suppose, like, you know, I always think, like, in 50 years time, you'll be like, back when we were in the pandemic.
Yeah, I know.
We're in the lockdown. It's like, that'll literally be us.
Yeah, completely. So what has been what do you think has been your biggest challenge so far in your life? Because you strike me as somebody who really rolls with the punches.
What has been my biggest challenge? I think probably, I'm not sure. I think I've had so many. Mm. I remember one big challenge was I had finished. So when I had finished uni and then I took like a year out, that ended up being like 2 years where I was just having a great time. And I was just kind of like traveling around, you know, going out with friends all the time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I wasn't really doing anything. And my parents were like, okay, that's enough. You're coming home. And I was like, okay, fine. So then I went home and I was like, I hate the way I always say it. I was like, but I went home and I wasn't really doing it. And I was just like, you know, no, there was no, I didn't know anybody at home, like in the town that I live in. And then those that I did were, you know, getting married or married with children. And I was just kind of by myself. And I was like, I cannot be here. You know, I need to go back. And at this stage, I must have been like 26, 27. And I think that I was, you know, I thought, oh, my time in London isn't over. I need to go back. And my parents were like, well, we're not paying for you to go back there. You know, we've done our job already. We've done, you know, your university and then a year of you just gallivanting around London while I was pretending that I was working and, you know, doing things which I wasn't. And so I was like, okay, I'm going back. I'm going to prove you wrong. And I remember coming back and then I started doing, I had friends that had done commercial modeling and they were getting great money for, you know, like e-commerce work and, you know, fitness things, like fitnessy jobs and stuff like that, and like doing the magazines, and they used to pay like really well. And I thought, I can do that 100%. I'm not going back to, you know, I'm not teaching. I'll give this a go. And so I did. And I just was like, I remember living with a woman who had cats. Oh, it was awful. And I was allergic to her fucking cats. And it was so bad. She had these two, you know, the cats from Lady and the Tramp, the Siamese.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Fucking, excuse my language, slithery bitches they were. Oh, they were rotten. But anyway, so I lived with this woman had like a 3-story house and she was like renting a room.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever really told the story. Everyone thinks I'm always like so glam and just, you know, doing fabulous things. No, I was living and I was allergic to this woman's fucking cats and I could never sleep at night. And I remember it was summer and it was roasting and the cats used to always come into my room and they'd be like, you know, hiding behind a curtain or under the bed. Scare the life out of you. I just do not like cats. And anyway, I was like, freaking, I had like hardly any money. And I was like, I need to get as many jobs as possible to save, to get out of here, to get myself my own apartment and to get back to the area. That was my goal. I was like, I want to get back to the area that I lived in where like most of my friends were and, you know, that I loved and adored and where I kind of had spent the first half of my London life.
Yeah.
So I remember I was like bloody starving. I used to eat like nothing. And I was in a relationship then that went really badly. And I like, I was like severely underweight. Anyway, I did what I needed to do. And I got out of the house with the cats and I got my own place. And I think that's probably one of the things. And then the whole relationship fell apart. Turns out he was like, had a whole other life. Like, you know, the way you read these stories,
right?
Like, who does this happen to?
Yeah.
It happens to me. That's who it happens to. Okay. So the guy that I had been with for like 3 years had this whole other life that I was like one of these ones that I thought I was going to marry, but I didn't, thank God.
Yeah.
And that would be divorce number 3. And he was American. So he went off back to America and he kind of left me there. And I was like, well, this is just, had to pick up the pieces. But I did. I moved into the apartment by myself. And I got myself back on my own 2 feet. And then I was kind of like, I'm amazing. I can do anything. Like, if I can do this by myself, I can do anything. And I think I really grew from that whole experience. And then kind of that's when social media came about. And I had been like very underweight. And then all of a sudden I found, and I think that's where Queens Don't Quit also comes into hand. Like, you know, it's all these different experiences where I was very underweight and in a really dark place. And I was very lonely as well, because obviously I was living by myself. My boyfriend wasn't my boyfriend ever at all. And I went on Instagram and stuff and there was these like, remember this girl? I think she might have been Brazilian. Don't know where she was from, but she was gorgeous. And she was so strong and she was so fit and she just looked so happy. And you know what? She probably isn't any of those things. Maybe she's one of these Instagram people. But to me, she looked great. And yeah. I was like, God, I would love to. I should be like that. And, you know, I kind of started changing my whole lifestyle from where I would be, you know, starving myself and running 10K a day to like nourishing my body and, you know, lifting weights and, you know, enjoying working out, not working out just to punish myself, but actually doing something that made me feel happy. Mm. And that's kind of where I got really back into enjoying fitness. And then I wanted to share that journey on social media. And that's what I did. And here we are today.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of guts to do what you did. I mean, you know, when I look at those photos of you from before where you are so unbelievably thin to where you are now, when you're glowing, you look so healthy. But also to put yourself out there on social media and actually allow yourself to be that vulnerable takes a lot of courage.
I think I was just like at that time, like nothing worse could have happened. Yeah. I just felt awful. I was just so down and so low and was just like, oh, and I started, you know, chatting to people online. And I suppose like that's why my forum is really important. So we have a forum on the Queenstown Quit website where everyone just chats away to each other and they all have these different conversations where they all support each other. And I was like, when I was going through that time, I would have loved something like that. And I see these stories that are similar to mine, you know, appear on my website where other women are helping these girls through times that they're going through. And even if it's just something really small, and I'm like, and a lot of the women will say, they'll be like, oh, you're the only adult conversation that I've had all day. And that's why I always chat on my Instagram lives. And especially during the lockdown, I think it's been so important that I do have those conversations. Like I know like 90% of people, once we finish the workout, will switch off. But that 10%, I'm always like, you might need me for something, whether it's just listen to me blabbering on about absolute nonsense, but maybe I'm the only person that you communicate with today and tomorrow or this week. And so that's what's, you know, that's what's really important to me, that communication and keeping that up with people.
And when you've experienced difficulty in your own life, it just gives you a level of understanding, doesn't it? And compassion for anyone who is struggling. I mean, it does sound like, you know, living with the cat lady and the breakup were an absolute catalyst for such positive change in your life.
The fucking cat lady, I'll never forget her. Just never forget those damn cats. I really don't like cats. Also, just because they would make me itch and sneeze, and it was just, you know, it couldn't have got anywhere. At least it was actually at least it was a decent area. Like the area that the house was in was beautiful, so I'll give her that. But just the cats and just it's awful.
So cats and kids, not so much.
Not so much. No, not so much for me. Although one day, maybe, you know. Actually, I was talking to himself about that. We were like, oh, maybe after we get married, we will try and have a child. And I think that's different. Like to have my own, I think I'd love that.
Yeah, yeah.
But other people's, yeah. Not so much.
They always say that. It is different when you have your own. But you speak so openly about so many issues that affect so many people, and particularly women, I suppose, irritable bowel syndrome, polycystic ovarian syndrome. Yeah. You speak very openly, and it's very healthy to have conversation around something that happens to us as women every single month, which are our periods, and everything from, you know, if your skin breaks out, whatever it is. Have you felt a change with your followers? Have they embraced that more or investigated their health and well-being a bit more? Because I think sometimes we're afraid to speak to a doctor or an expert if we're feeling uncomfortable about something. But you've actually probably helped so many people, and probably more than you even realize, by being so open about your own struggles.
That you wouldn't, like, the stories that we get, I'd be in tears half the time. Yeah. Like some really emotional stories. We've had a lot of people with major cancer scares and things like that. And those who have had cancer, those who are going through chemo, and all just from, you know, those who have been diagnosed with PCOS and things like that, people who've just constantly, you know, where I'm like, go back again, go back again, go back again to the doctor, like push more, you know, who eventually do get. And it's like every day we'll get one or more messages from women who, and it's always women, because like we don't have any men. So it's just women. Mm-mm. So just from women who you know, who have read the stories, now whatever it may be, my mom is always like, yeah, everything's wrong with you. And I'm just like, because I go to the doctor. I'm like, everybody has stuff wrong with them when they go to the doctor, you know?
Yeah.
If there's any kind of twinge that I have, I'm like, oh, I have to go to the doctor. Just like, you know, bear with my notes. I mean, I've been to the emergency more time for being constipated than you know. Like, I swear to God, it's really bad.
Okay.
But we get through it in the end.
But that's a better way to be as well. That is a better way to be proactive about your health, I think, than to be, you know, head in the sand about it.
Exactly. And I think, like, when you're constantly sharing stuff, the only thing is that a lot of people will ask me and I'm like, no, I can't tell you.
Sure.
Like, you have to. I am not a doctor. Definitely not. I was like, I'm definitely not going back to university. So go to your doctor. But yeah, they do. They, you know, it is really amazing. And I think that's what's like the most special thing about social media. Like, a lot of people can see social media as really negative, like when we spoke about like the filters and things like that and the fake people on there. But there are, you know, there are accounts like my own, where you go to and you learn things and you realize, you know, like things like that, like just going to the doctor and like you read someone's story. And that's what I say. Like, I put these, you know, I put up these photos with captions and, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe one person reads that to the end and gets something out of it. And I'm like, I would rather help that one person and, you know, and save them from something, or, you know, something click in their brain that they need to get checked out or they need to do something about their lives, than have like a million people like my photo just because, you know, I look nice and gain nothing out of it. And so I think, like, when I am posting things on social media, you know, I don't post them for, you know, just to gain likes or to gain followers. I'm like, you know, I'm not there celebrating with balloons. Oh my God, it's so cringe. Like, oh, you know, 300,000 followers, or, you know, I gained 100,000 followers, so let me, you know, get a cake. I'm just like, you know, if it grows, amazing. If it doesn't, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter to me whether, you know, I think if I hit a million, I would be like, Jesus, I did okay, didn't I? But like, you know, that would impress me. But like, until that, it's just kind of like, it is like we're growing every day. But then, you know, we hope to spread the message that we're spreading, and the more, you know, the more women that listen and gain something out of it, then the better that is. So I suppose it is just like we're trying to share like a positive message of some sort.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, that's why people connect with it, because the content is genuine. And thankfully I'm definitely seeing more and more accounts that are embracing real. And maybe they weren't before, but they certainly are now. And perhaps there's an element of it's now fashionable to be real and be vulnerable, but also people see the merit in it and the value for you as an individual, but also the domino effect that it has for everybody else as well. It just improves everyone's lives when we drop the facade and stop pretending we're perfect all the time. Of course, there are still plenty of accounts that are in, you know, the constantly filtered world, and it's not a judgment, it's just an observation, but there are more and more that are embracing the real. How is your own health now? Because I know you've had a number of surgeries, you've had fibroids removed, you've always been really open about it, which some people would struggle perhaps to be so open. I certainly am on a very similar wavelength to you in that I've always been very open about my own struggles in every way. I've had cancer in the past, I've had miscarriages, I've always been very, very open about discussing them, because I understand and I have felt firsthand that it helps me. It's quite selfish, actually. It helps me when I'm open and honest about it.
I was just about to say this.
Yeah.
I was just about to say it. I was like, I enjoy being open about it because I myself also gain so much from it. Which I suppose it's not really selfish. Like, you are doing good, but at the same time,
yeah, it's probably the wrong word, but it is, you know, it helps you yourself, I suppose. Yeah.
And I think that's like, even when I go back to like, whenever, you know, I started this journey on Instagram and sharing, like, you know, that was probably, I suppose, selfish, or, you know, I was gaining so much from it as well, because I was putting my story out there and hearing other people's stories and getting something back from that. And sometimes I feel, it's easier to talk to people that you don't know than it is to talk to, like, you know, you're close. Sometimes it's easier to talk to a stranger about something. It's like therapy, like talking to people that you don't know and just being, you can be so open, so honest, and then, you know, and then never really, rather than talk to a friend who, you know, may not understand or may feel pity or whatever it is that you don't want them to feel. But speaking with someone who has, you know, gone through the same experience as you, you know, and that you understand each other, like, there's just something, you know, there's just something about that. And then, you know, you don't have to bring it up again. You may never, ever come across that person again on social media, but you've both connected in a way and gained something from that. And I think that's really important. Like, and that's another, you know, that is kind of why I share the message. People obviously, you know, talk to each other, maybe amongst their friends and that about it. Or, you know, I have conversations with a lot of women that maybe will only message me that once and I'll never hear from them again. But they just, or a lot of women will be like, I don't expect a reply, and send me what I like to call a short novel of their life. Because it literally is a short novel. It'll be like, it's like just so long, like scrolls and scrolls and scrolls of what they, you know, of their life and what they've been through. And they'll just be like, I just really needed to get that off my chest.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and they're not, obviously I do, I try and reply to everybody. There are messages that I obviously do miss. But, you know, and sometimes I'll reply and they'll not reply again. But I know that by them telling me whatever they're going through, that they just needed to tell someone.
It's like a weight lifted.
And I think that's really important. It is kind of like, you know, counseling or therapy or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And that's, you know, that's why it's important to, and also just to open these topics of conversation that are like taboo. It's like, it's not a taboo. Women have had their periods since the dawn of time.
Yes.
How do you think we're here?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and it's a taboo topic. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Taboo.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, it is, it's seen as like, even when we were in school, I've spoken about that. Like, you know, when you were in school and you were like hiding pads or hiding, or like afraid to open the pad in case, and I went to an all girls school.
Yeah.
Everybody had their period.
Yeah.
What were we so afraid of? Like, why was it always like this, you know, awful thing that we went through? And to be honest, I think I'm open about things now, because when I was young and I did get my period, when I first got my period, I didn't tell my mom for a good, I think it was almost a year. She didn't know. Now, maybe she did, and she just didn't, and actually didn't know. I don't think she knew, because when I did tell her, she was really mad that I hadn't told her. It's just, it's all coming back to me. But she was kind of questioning me, like, I know period, because my cousin was the same age and she had had hers. But I was just like, what the hell is going on with me? I just knew that, you know, I had to use these always things that mom kept in her bathroom under the sink. And, you know, I would just like steal them. Lucky my sister was older, so she, mom wouldn't have noticed. And
but did you know what was happening to you?
Not really.
Did you not?
I kind of knew. I was like, what's going on? Like, you know, and then obviously it was like almost a year later and I was like, oh yeah. And she was so upset that I hadn't told her, but I was just so embarrassed.
Yeah.
That this was happening to me. And I was like, we shouldn't. And I think, like, and then other things that kind of happened, you know, further down in my life. Sorry, there goes my email. You know, that I didn't tell, you know, that I didn't open up about and didn't tell. And then those things get worse. And it's just like, you know, you shouldn't. And for what? It's just like, why are we so shy to talk about these things that every single woman goes through?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's just, and this is it, like reading now that I'm older. And, you know, reading about people who have had like miscarriages and things. And obviously we read about Meghan Markle and she had her miscarriage and she spoke all about that. And that's something that happens to women every single day.
That's it.
And
absolutely.
So few women. And then, you know, some women come out and other, you know, they're like, oh, they're so brave and coming out and speaking about this. And I'm sure it's like the most heart-wrenching thing to have to talk about. You know, and if it did happen to me, I would 100%. You know, come out and speak openly about it, because it's just like, it shouldn't be seen as this, you know, it shouldn't be hidden.
Absolutely.
Like, women need to be able to speak openly about these things that are happening, you know, that are happening to them. I swear to God, if it was happening to men, we'd all know about it.
I've just worked on a documentary on the topic that'll be aired on the 7th of April, and it's the first time on Irish TV that the topic of miscarriage will ever be discussed in detail on a documentary, which I think says a lot of says a lot about us, doesn't it, as a people,
yeah.
And where we are. It's 2021 and this is the first time this has happened. So, yeah, and as you said, it's, you know,
I have goosebumps.
Yeah.
Goosebumps. Mm. Isn't that just, it's just crazy.
Crazy.
And you think about like all the women who do suffer in silence and do and don't tell anybody,
yeah.
You know, and oh, keep that to yourself. Oh, you know, I hate when people say that. Oh, you just keep that to yourself. I'm like, no, I don't want to fucking keep it to myself.
Yeah.
Sorry, I lot. It's just, I want to speak to someone else who's gone through the same thing, you know, and just, and feel normal about it, you know, because it is, it's normal. Like these things happen to women all the time. You should be able to speak up about them and speak openly about them. And maybe, you know, especially when it comes to like PCOS and fibroids and, you know, smear tests and all of those things, you know, if they were more normalized, would there be as many problems?
Exactly. If they were normalized and you were proactive about asking questions and maybe getting help, these issues get sorted quicker than having people living in pain and discomfort and not understanding why as well. Yeah.
The fibroid thing is really amazing. Because I've always had issues, and even growing up, I had issues. So I've always just had health insurance and it's like the best thing that you can pay for, but you can obviously get a lot. So I had my fibroid removed privately, because on the NHS, but on the NHS, they won't remove your fibroid unless it's bigger than 12 centimeters. Now mine was 9 centimeters by 9 centimeters. So it was the size of like a cantaloupe and it was sticking out of my stomach.
Yeah.
And I obviously held a lot of weight with it. I ended up gaining like 10 kilos or something. I was in constant pain. My period was like 2 weeks long. It was so heavy. It was just awful. And that grew. I'd always had fibroids, but they were small, like the 2 centimeters, 3 centimeters. And when it's that size, like you might get a slightly painful period. Like it's not, you don't have to have surgery. And I was just like, when I started to speak about it, a lot of women were like, you know, told me, they were like, oh, I, you know, mine's just not big enough to get taken out. And I thought, how sick is that?
Yeah.
That,
and when you say that, like 9 centimeters sounds like that's a lot of tissue that is not, it's not useful
so then
in your body.
It grew really fast. It grew within like 6 to 8 months. So it went from being like 3-4 centimeters to 9 centimeters and just completely stick. Like I couldn't even lie. When I lay down, it would just be this like bump sticking out. I looked like I was kind of pregnant, you know?
Okay.
And it was horrendous. And then I obviously, you know, went in, you know, got surgery and got it removed. But a lot of women have that. And then, you know, don't have health insurance and are only, you know, and are depending on the NHS that won't remove it unless it's 12 centimeters. And I was just like, I couldn't live with it at 9 centimeters. How anybody is, you know, and they just have to deal with it and that's it.
Yeah. Can you describe,
like,
Can you describe what a fibroid is for those listening who may have heard the term but don't know? It's a massive, it's muscle. Am I right in thinking that?
It's kind of like, sometimes they have hair and teeth. Yes. How weird is that? So it is. It's like a kind of mass of like muscle and tissue that just grows in your uterus or like in your in your uterus. And they can be really, really small. And sometimes you can pass them and, or, you know, they can be like 1 centimeter and they can grow. And sometimes they can just stay at like 1 centimeter and they are like benign. So they're not like, you do have to keep checking them, but like, you know, they rarely would develop into anything else, but they can grow really, really big and they can make your periods really heavy and really painful. And like mine actually grew, grew where they had to make an incision into my uterus and then stitch it up, which means that they're like 90% sure I'll never be able to give birth naturally.
Okay.
When, you know, if I get pregnant, they were like, you know, they'll have to constantly monitor it because they don't know how. So they had to do a 1 centimeter incision into my uterus. So they're like, you know, when obviously a baby grows, that is going to stretch and they don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
And I was like, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But, you know, and I suppose I've just never really thought about it, because I'm like, well, I'm not planning to get pregnant right now. So
no, and also the body, I'm a big believer in the body is always working towards health, and you clearly look after your body so well, yeah, that, you know, while that may have been true at a certain point in your life, you can, you know, the body is constantly rejuvenating itself, and cells are re-emerging, and you know, it's a constant changing process. So, you know,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was like the PCOS, you know, like my PCOS was at its worst. You know, I had like no periods. It was just awful. And that would have been when I had that really bad breakup, when I was with the cats and the cat lady and the really underweight and that whole stressful situation. And they were like, I remember going to the doctor and she was like, you're like, you'll never have children. Like that, they were literally like, that's it. And I was, and of course my parents were like, oh, we need more answers. Like, go to someone else. We have to go to as many doctors as possible. And they were just like, yeah, like you're, you know, I had to have surgery for that as well, twice. So I had two surgeries, on the ovaries for like ruptured cysts and all the rest. And they were like, there's a lot of scar tissue there. And then once I had the fibroid taken out, after that, I went to obviously have a checkup. And I just go anyway, usually kind of like every 6 to 8 months. Mm. And he was like, your ovaries are beautiful. He actually said they were fruity. And I was like, ha, take that, mom. I had fruity ovaries. And they were like, yeah, like if you wanted to, that was his thing. He was like, if you wanted to, you know, go ahead and try and have children now, like you're ready to go.
There
and I was
go.
Like, isn't that amazing how things just change from like, you know, 6 years ago, they were like, yeah, no, never, no children for you. To now they're like, oh yeah, you have fruity ovaries. And I was like, it's so amazing, like stress and lifestyle and all of those things and all the different times of your life that you go through and how Absolutely. They affect your body.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So how is your health now? I'm taking it that it's good. You have fruity ovaries.
I have fruity ovaries. I think it's good.
Yeah.
Like, I feel great. Mm. I'm a bit tired. Like, I haven't had a day off. Well, I had COVID at Christmas.
Oh, did you have it? Okay.
I did, yeah. I ended up getting COVID. I mean, we didn't leave the house.
Yeah,
and then we
isolating.
Had tests done. And this was before. So I actually came back from London. I went home. So my dad was diagnosed with bowel cancer, and we flew home. He wanted everybody to be home. Mm-hmm. So we went into lockdown ourselves for like 2 weeks. Then we got tests done, had two tests done, both negative, then came back home. Then we were home for about 2 weeks. And then dad was like, I have COVID. We were like, what the fuck? Like, no one had been out of the house. Of course, dad had been down in the office. In his office, wrapping things up. And we were like, why are you going out and about? And so he got it. And my sister had just had a baby. And then I started showing symptoms, and then I had it. And it's so funny because only half of us, so we were all tested, only half of us in the house, our tests came back positive.
Okay.
But everybody had symptoms.
Yeah.
And I was like, isn't that amazing?
Isn't
because,
it?
Like,
that
happened.
And again, that's happened so often where, you know, in the one household, some people can avoid it and others don't.
Yeah, but everybody was dying, like not dying, but everybody had, except for one of my brothers didn't have any symptoms, but everybody else had symptoms. Like my fiance, he was really sick, like myself. Actually, my parents ended up having it kind of the mildest form.
Okay,
I was.
Good.
Broken. I have never felt pain like it go through my body. A really bad chest. And my other brother, so there's actually we're three brothers and two sisters. And my sister's husband was there, obviously, because they had the baby at home. And so we all had it in different ways, but everybody had symptoms of some sort. But my parents, so my mom, she actually just got the all clear that she doesn't have. She had breast cancer about 5 years ago, and she recently got the all clear.
Oh,
so that's
brilliant.
Fab.
Yes.
But she didn't have it that badly. And then dad, who's going through chemo, he was fine. He went to bed for like a day. And then he was like, nope, I feel great. Me, who's like the fit, healthy one, dying. Yeah. Absolutely dying. Couldn't keep my eyes away. Like, it was just bizarre. Wrecked and just... And I was like, it's just, you know, it's so fascinating how it affected everybody differently. And, you know, and you think like, you know, in our minds, we were like, oh my God, we have to be so careful because of dad and all the rest and the new baby and stuff like that. And they were completely fine.
How is your dad doing now?
He's good. He's going through, he'll kill me for talking about it. He's like, don't tell anybody. But he's on his fourth round of chemo now, and then they'll do scans and see how he is. So he actually, I was home. So I actually drove my sister home. So she's usually based in London, and I drove her home. And that was when he was diagnosed with bile cancer, and he had part of it. He had a surgery to have it removed. And we went home to see him in October then. And then we were told then that it had moved on and he had secondary cancer, I think in his liver. I can't remember where else. So anyway, luckily the rest of my family, so all my siblings and my sister and the new baby and that are all at home in my parents' house. And it was only myself and my fiance that had to come back to London just for work purposes. Yeah. We had to be here.
Sure.
But everybody else is at home. And so really keeping them in such good spirits, you know, especially with the new baby and stuff like that, you know, it's very uplifting.
Yes.
And there's loads happening around the house. I think if it had just been mom and dad by themselves, you know, it would have been a lot different. But now the house is really busy and, you know, there's lots going on. And I think that makes such a difference.
Yeah. And look, I fully appreciate as well. It is a very private matter to discuss. So,
but I think so many people are going through this kind of thing when they're, you know I've spoken about it. And of course, selfishly, I've had lots of people message me and they're like, oh, same with my parents or my dad or my granny or whoever, you know, is sick. And it's so hard to be away. Like, all you want to do is kind of go home. Mm. You're just like, I'm just dying to get home and like wondering, so sorry, now that's my... From the kettle boiling to my emails coming in to the dishwasher. I mean, it's all happening here. But it is. It's like one of those things where it's really hard at this time. You know, all you want to do is go home, especially when someone's sick and someone is so close to you. Mm. You just want to be home. But, you know, we can't be. And that's just it. And, you know, until we can travel again. But at least it's like it's comforting knowing that the rest of my siblings are all there.
Yeah.
And of course, we, you know, FaceTime is just amazing. Like, you just talk every day.
Yeah. Is there a plan to get home? I suppose it depends on the vaccine.
We had planned on moving home. We'd kind of started looking, I suppose, summer 2019.
Okay.
We'd been looking at, you know, different areas at home to move home to. And then COVID happened. And so we just ended up being stuck here.
Will it still happen, though? Do you think you'll still move back?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Dying to get back. And, you know, I've been dying to come back for a long time now, just because, like, you know, I think now my time in London is done.
Okay.
And also it's like, you know, during COVID, you realize you're stuck in a tiny box in London. And, you know, I don't want to live, you know, at the moment I live in an apartment. And although great when everything's open, because there's plenty to do here, but when everything's closed, and it's just, you know, I'm older and I'd rather be closer to home. And, you know, once I start a family, I'd rather have a home.
Yeah.
I'm renting in London, and I think, you know, we're trying to make a decision of whether we buy, you know, a house in London or a house at home, but you obviously get so much more for your money at home. And it'd be nice to be closer to my parents and friends at home. So
yeah,
your friendship groups as well in London, they constantly change because people are constantly coming and going and all the rest.
So would you move back to Newry itself?
I'm not sure. We did look at Dublin and kind of like outside Dublin. We've been looking at loads of areas. To be honest, it's just because nothing's really come on the market. It's really difficult. And that's why. But we have looked at, you know, closer to home. Both on north side, north of the border and south of the border, you know, both, because we are very on the border where we are, You can kind of live either or. But I suppose it's just finding something and, you know, seeing what's best. And then maybe I'll just take a fancy and move somewhere hot. Like, who knows? I changed my mind quite a lot and I was like, I'm so sick of this weather. It might be nice to just go live somewhere warm for a year and then move home. After being stuck in the apartment for, well, exactly a year now today.
Yeah, yeah. Are you spontaneous or would you be a planner? Are you a bit of both?
I think I'm a bit of both, definitely. I think I was more spontaneous. Like, I've had plenty of, like, random, let's just go away tomorrow kind of trips and things like that over the years. I think now, because I'm more settled with work and with commitments, that I would probably be more of a planner. However, you know, if himself, he would definitely be, you know, he has a business here that he runs himself. And so things would definitely have to be planned. But I suppose if he said to me, oh, you know, we're moving here and you know, next week, I would be like, yeah, sure, no problem. Let's go. Bye.
Yeah.
Up and go. Change the scenery. Yeah. So I would love, and I suppose you still have, like, you know, you still have kind of like hopes and dreams. Like, even though I am 35, I'm like, gosh, I'd love to have gone and lived in California, you know, for a year or a couple of months or something like that. And that's something that I would still love to do or like go live somewhere hot or, you know, something like that. So it is like we do think about things like that. And I'm like, you know, do I want to just settle or do I want to go and maybe try something else? You know, maybe another career. Who knows?
Who knows?
And I think that's like, you know, one of my friends, she's just started a new career and she was like, oh, you know, a lot of people were really surprised. And she's 37. And I was just like, why? Like, why is there this? And again, back to the age thing. Like, why is there this ageist thing that, like, when you're in your 30s, that's it. You're done. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's over. I'm like, well, I might live to 100.
Yeah.
I've got 70 years left. I'm not going to do, you know, I'm not going to just waste my years doing something that I don't enjoy. So I think that's really important, you know, like you can just change. You just have to have the courage to do it. And I think that's like, fear is obviously like a huge thing that affects everybody. You know, they're afraid to maybe to move away or they're afraid. But I think I would be more afraid of having regrets of not doing something than just, you know, like maybe I would move to California and I would be like, this is rubbish. Why am I here? And you know what, I could then just be like, oh, I'm gonna move home now, and that's it.
And at least you would have known.
Give it a go. At least I tried.
But the next few years anyway, you're looking at perhaps eventually moving back, but also
100%.
Okay, brilliant. And then you're getting married. I mean, I'm not going to pry because I understand it's your private life, but you have decided.
Getting married next year.
You are getting married next year. Oh, brilliant.
I am getting next June. Yeah. June 2022. We set a date. I have the church booked and the venue, and that's about it.
Lovely. Well, they're the important bits done. Would you be religious?
I would be. I don't believe that you have to go to church to be religious. Like, some of the least religious people go to church. But I would say my prayers. But I would kind of, you know, I do believe, you know, I do believe in God, and I do believe, you know, that in heaven, and I don't believe in hell. Just don't want to believe in it.
Yes.
I'm just like, no. I lived with two cats and I did not kill them. I'm going to fucking heaven. Angel wings. So the cats may go to hell. I'm going to heaven. I do believe, like, I would, you know, and I think that you do, especially in times of sorrow and in times of need. And I think a lot of people, I'm like, are you telling me that, you know, if something happened, you know, people who are like, oh, no, I don't believe in God. And I'm like, I think if you were on your deathbed, you'd be like, oh, Jesus, God, I'm so sorry that I said I didn't believe in you. Please, I want to go to heaven. Like, you know, it is. And maybe, you know, maybe it doesn't exist. You know, maybe it doesn't. But the thought that it does, I think is so lovely. And I think it's a very comforting thing to pray and to, I suppose it's like meditation. And, you know, everybody has their own beliefs. But that's what we were brought up with. And my mom and my grandmother, especially, God, she was so holy. She was super holy, my grandmother. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, and they got great comfort, and they still do, out of out of their beliefs. And so,
yes,
you know, I've always found, you know, I've been to like Fatima and Lourdes and Knock and all those. Jesus, I've done them all.
You've done them all.
I've done them all. I'm so holy. But when you go to those places, you do get a sense, a great sense of spirituality and of a higher power. Mm. And I think that really does show something. You know, there is something there. And I think it's really special. And I think it's lovely to have religion or to have a belief in something and have that in your life.
Maeve, this chat did not disappoint in any way whatsoever.
Everybody says, everyone's always like, you do not stop talking. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. You may cut some of that out. Don't cut out the cats, though.
Oh, they'll definitely be a highlight. They'll be a highlight. Thank you. It's been so much fun and so refreshingly real. And this is what my podcast is all about. So it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
I'm so thrilled. Thank you so much for having me.
This episode of Ready to Be Real Conversations was brought to you in partnership with Irish kombucha brand Synergy, who offer a delicious range of 100% natural ingredients, organic and low in calorie sparkling drink varieties, containing all of the amazing benefits of kombucha and available in supermarkets nationwide.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.